Watch and Wine, and I'm Raya,
Treva,
and Lynn.
And we're missing our fourth one in the middle, Champagne, but she's on hiatus right now. So let's talk about this, a book-to-movie adaptation of
Where the Crawdads Sing
by Delia Owens. It was written and or released in 2018. It also was on Reese Witherspoon's book club. Mm-hmm. And she also produced the movie, which we'll get to later.
Yes.
For now, we are drinking Cooper's Hawk Malbec. And it's more of like a drier wine, which they know that that's more my speed, hence why I have the bottle in front of me. I usually don't actually like Malbecs, but this one is on the more full-bodied side than the tangier, like drier side. So I like this one.
Are you a sommelier?
Hey. One day. Wine connoisseur. I mean, I drink it. It's there.
All right, so let's get started.
Let's dive into this book. I enjoyed it. I didn't know how I was going to feel about it. But what I will say is I didn't do any back reading, so I didn't know what the book was going to be about at all. So I kind of jumped into it blindsided. And I didn't read the story on the cover or anything. And I was pleasantly surprised.
I never actually read those, read about the book because I'm always lost. It starts, what? But actually, I too enjoyed it. I thought it was a good book. It kept me entertained. It kept me thinking, oh, you know, I could use my imagination a lot on how people were treating Marsh Girl and how people treated the family and just being an outsider. I think it had a lot of similarities, not to just to people from a small town and people on the outside, but I think it had a lot of similarities to just what we deal with every day when it comes to racism or sexism.
Yes.
Or being a minority.
Or being right. A minority.
Like the majority. So I guess for us, it's easier to relate reading this book because we are a part of the marginalized.
Yes.
And so is Marsh Cole and her family because they weren't these pristine.
To sort of see that dynamic of discriminatory behavior that wasn't necessarily black on white sort of actions.
Yeah.
And so you're right. It was a great perspective to look at it, which could honestly enlighten people to just how people are treated differently. People are not blinded by the whole, you know, black white situation. Because sometimes that just, you know, people shut down.
As soon as they hear
talking about discrimination,
you're bringing race into this. Here we go, and they completely shut down.
They touched upon it with the characters that owned the country club. What do you call it?
The store.
Yeah. And so with them covering like the store, and the random guy walking in and calling him like boy, things like that. Mm-hmm. It was like you still saw it, but that wasn't what it was the focus.
Right.
The focus was on the classism between the white community that was in North Carolina, Barclay Cove. So
anyway, you got a good memory.
I know, I was sitting there thinking, but
I was like Park Cove something.
But so yeah, and so I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that I love in this story is that, well, first of all, it was just this awesome story of survival because this poor little girl had to survive out in the marsh by herself because she was pretty much deserted by all of her family. Great story. And I encourage you guys to read it. But the bond that she ended up making with the Black family in the book, who were marginalized during this time period also, was just amazing because they ended up treating her like their own daughter. And they even said it in the book, like, you know, he put a copy of her book in the window as if it was his own child. And he really felt like she was his own child. And they pretty much helped raise this little girl, even in a time where Black people and white people were not supposed to be getting along or interacting with each other.
So I didn't look up anything for the book prior to reading it, but I had conversations with a few people about it. One of my best friends, her mom is in a book club and they've been in a book club for like 25 years, I swear. They had read it and she would talk to me about it and she was giving me her interpretation about it. She is, well, she's a Black woman, but her grandmother was Italian.
Mm.
And how Italians also dealt with their classism within like their own culture, I should say, and then how people are from like Sicily are treated differently than like mainland. So when she was telling me about having the history behind like Italians and their classism, it just kind of like reminded me of the differences that, well, in our culture itself, we have colorism, classism, we have all that also, but you don't really hear about it in like the white culture as much when it comes to like now. Maybe as this book was set in the 60s, so it's a little different. But it still was, I guess back then, the classism was a bigger thing. So to be in North Carolina in the South, in the marsh, like you would think, I mean, I think everybody's from the marsh, but like,
dude, it was right around the corner from you. Why are you acting like it's such a big
Marsh girl had a boat, and that was the only way of getting food at some points of time. And the other ones had boats because it was convenient.
Yeah.
So you look at it like necessity wise. But anyway, before I go on a rant, I liked the book a lot. It was a little bit of a break for me in the serial killer, like psychological thrillers that I've been reading. So at first I was like, man, what am I reading? And then I started getting into it and I really enjoyed it. So,
Well, you know, you had a range of emotions going through it. But whose pick was this?
Me.
Okay. That was a good pick.
It was a good pick. I like it. I mean, I also
make it about murder, kill.
I also love, which doesn't quite happen as often as, oh, well, this isn't going to come across very good, but as often as it should, but everything that Kaya, is that what her name was? Kaya?
Marsh Girl.
Went through watching like her mom get just beat, verbally abused, physically abused, and then like, I'm sorry, but everything all the other kids went through.
Oh, passed down to each one of them.
Yeah,
like it just, Jody left, the sisters left.
Regardless if it was a male or a female, it just passed down.
It had to be on somebody.
And then just her transition to, okay, I learned from them what not to do so that she could survive.
Not be seen.
Yeah. So she learned that and then she continued to do that, not just in her own home, but just throughout everything. I mean, even, you know, when she was left home, she had to fend for herself, but she still kind of creeped in and creeped out as quickly as she could out of town. Like you said, the people that only people that really noticed her were the store owners. And then, of course, the lawyer at that one point noticed her as well. But there wasn't very many people that really paid too much attention to her, except for her man.
Yes.
Mr. Tate.
Mr. Tate. So you guys ready to dive into the movie?
Yes, let's.
Well, one more thing about the story.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. We can go to the movie. Go to the movie. I'll get back.
So I wanted to dive into the movie as we talked about Tate.
Because I
think this was a great adaptation. I think they did a good job weaving in all the different periods of her life. But there were some significant things that they took out of the movie that were in the book that I think really helped to highlight how much Tate loved and cared for her, because he really was with her through so many of the milestones, helping her when she got her period. And so because they took out some of those, I guess, milestones that she had in her life, I didn't in the movie get that love, that like diehard deep love connection that I got reading the book. In addition, I didn't get that diehard fatherly, motherly connection from the people that owned the store. Like the whole period situation, from Tate telling her like what she needed to be, what may be happening to her running to the store to get the woman that worked at the store and the man that worked at the store, like not asking no questions, go down the street and get her because she needs her. Mm-hmm. Like that was so significant because that is like a family bond. Mm-hmm. And they really missed out on the opportunity to show that emotion in the movie. So, okay, yeah, sorry about writing, but that just bothered me so much.
No, it's about just, the point. It's just all the connections with them. Like, I remember in the movie, like, she had to go to meet with her editor or whatever. Now, you have this girl that didn't really go anywhere, didn't really do anything. Her mom, you know, everybody rolled out on her, but her mom left at a very early age. She had to learn all of these things that she probably would have learned from a parent, from a neighbor. And then in the book, it's like you don't see as much. In the movie, you saw him teaching her to read and a couple of things. But then she goes to meet her, publisher. She can get on that bus on her own. She got that hair done all her own. Like it doesn't, she had these dresses. She got herself. It didn't really talk as much about how much they helped her.
Right.
I mean, yeah, she was out there on her own. At night, she was by herself. I don't know how she did it, all those noises. But like she said, she went outside. She slept outside. She got used to the noises outside. But they did really help her along from a distance, but they still helped her along. And I think you're right. They did miss a lot of that in the movie. Maybe it was inferred or
I think it's intentional that they wanted her to really, really seem isolated.
Mm.
And then, but that missed the connection when they were at the trial.
Oh yeah.
And Tate was on her side, the store owners were on the side. Like, they missed that. And the brother coming back, like, she had those people, but like, you kind of missed the fact that even though they looked out for her, they loved her. And I think those little stories, they matter to be in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's really shown why they're sitting on her side.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was burning up over the brother. I'm just like, dude, like, you went to the military. You couldn't just come back and check. Like, nobody came back to just, like, they all just rolled out. And I get it. You hated that situation. You never want to go back. But once you're actually grown, like, this dude was in the military. What was your dad going to do to you at that point? Come home and at least check. Everybody left her.
And then said that, you know, you talked to your aunt who your mom was living with. Like, at that point, you didn't think to notify the youngest, who was literally by herself at the age of, what, 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that?
Yeah.
It was just crazy. Even, I mean, the mom, like, really, you know, your baby is there. And I don't really
care.
But
she tried. They said she tried.
Yeah.
She tried to save money. She tried to get lawyers.
And by the time that she was able to do anything, she ended up getting sick.
Okay. Yeah. And then remember, she wrote the letters.
But she knew her daughter.
Asking for the kids. But she wrote him.
Yeah, that's just.
You're right. I would have had to fight a little bit.
I would have just.
He was beating the crap out of her.
Because Jody, the brother, said that when she talked to his aunt, that she was like basically in a comatose, didn't speak state for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine how long it took her to get the courage to even write, let alone contact him.
Right.
I don't know.
Sad story.
As a big sis, I just don't know how you just don't grab her and take her with you.
Right. Or come back in the middle of the night and sneak and get her something.
Yeah. I mean, especially the older sisters that like left together. So y'all left together, but you're going to leave the youngest one just fending for herself. I mean, I'm not going to judge anybody in that situation, but at the same time,
like, come back.
I don't have a sister, but I have people that I love that are younger than me. And if I was literally in that same household and he was abusing me, who's next?
Right.
I'm taking you with me.
It's like if I can't get out and if I can't get you out when I leave, I'm definitely coming back to get you.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you may have to endure a little bit, but there's no way I couldn't sleep because I would never forget that you were there. I would never forget just leaving you there.
Never.
Especially the younger one, because he was the last one. So the others could have thought, oh, she got out, or child protectors, or somebody might have come to help her out. I mean, honestly, if she had gone to school, that might have helped out a lot too, but she was just so embarrassed. But the youngest one is the one who knew, the younger son is the one who knew she was there by herself.
Yeah, because he was the only one that was left.
But I was thinking to myself, it doesn't always, this is with my other story that I was going to say, or my other observation that isn't going to come out very good, but it's good for me to see that she went through seeing her mom abused. She went through seeing her siblings, her dad abused everyone physically and mentally. And then she recognized it when it was happening to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she got his butt.
Oh, yeah. Thinking like she was going to just like, you know, kind of push him off. But she was like, oh, no, I know they keep coming back. So she was kicking him.
She knew from the history. What'd she say in the beginning? I learned from the others what to do and not to do.
Yeah.
And she figured it out.
And she became
always,
what was that? The firefly, or what was the one that ate their husband or whatever? She talked about that.
I know Praying Mantis does that, but
Praying Mantis.
It's another book that she had referenced that she said that like the males call the other males to come, and that way she had the next victim.
Yeah.
So that they might spare the man or whatever, the male. Yeah, I remember that. I can remember the animals.
Yeah, so
they do that, but
she said something.
She made so many bug references that I felt like, of course, connected to what she needed to do to this guy that was
But go ahead.
I was just speaking of like her referencing the bugs and stuff. They in the book, I felt like she would go like, as a person that goes on random tangents. If you ask me anything, sports medicine, I'm gonna start talking to you for like half an hour. But I feel like in the book, she would go on these like tangents where she was like really ranting about like the education that she got herself, which was like, you know, the colors and why the sky is blue and why certain animals do certain things and stuff like that. In the movie, it was like one or two scenes.
Two references, yeah.
Like when she met the publisher, she was kind of going through some details. And then with Chase, kind of like made a statement. But in the book, it was like whenever anybody got close enough to her to like let that guard down, she really shined. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they didn't do that enough in the movie. Mm-hmm. 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 To where the show was like, the Marshall had some... I mean, she was schooling people and stuff. I had me Googling right, like the wildlife in North Carolina. And then I tried to figure out like where was the marsh versus like Eastern and Western. Yeah, I went on the rabbit hole stuff.
So let me just say that it's very appropriate that we're drinking the Cooper's Hawk wine, because do you remember in the book? She was like, and then the Cooper's Hawk land right in the patio. She kept talking about the Cooper's Hawk that was showing up.
No, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Every time something happened, it was
a feather. That makes sense. I can't spin the ball the right way. There we go.
Oh, every time something significant happened,
the Cooper's Hawk flew. The Cooper's Hawk showed up on the porch or whatever. Yeah. I did that.
Well, it's a shame they're made from Illinois, but it's okay. Give me North Carolina.
I felt like I wasn't a Cooper's Hawk, but I'm going to go back and check that out.
It was a Cooper's Hawk in the book. There was, because when she said, I was like, oh, that's a real bird. I didn't know it was a real bird. And of course, I'm at Cooper's Hawk all the time. But anyway, so I actually had to look it up. But she kept talking about it. And I looked up and couldn't believe it. It was a Cooper's Hawk. Mm-hmm.
And
I
was like, oh. And you know, after I'm going to go like Googling it, because not that I don't believe you, but it's one of those.
Right. So, uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm just going to get myself prepared for that.
Okay. Are we ready to move on to casting?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so the woman that played Junebugs or Junebug, what was his name? What's the two that owned the store?
Jumpin' was the
Jumpin' husband.
Thank you. And Mabel,
I want to say. So was the wife. Mabel, the wife. I love her.
Yeah.
And that's a great, she's a great actress, and I really do love her. And I just feel like knowing her skills, they could have incorporated Mabel's role just a little bit more in the movie, yeah, because she was so much more motherly. Yeah. And she did it in the movie, but not
with the lollipop. But like the whole period scene.
Yeah.
Like that was what they needed to really help her shine with her role.
To make you understand that this was Mabel's daughter.
Yeah.
Marsh Girl was her daughter.
Yeah.
And that's what she believed. That's what this couple believed. And she could have pulled it off because she's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm sad that they didn't give her that opportunity to show that.
Because she was, you know, yeah, she loved her tape, but they were her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, they were nice people. And I got that more out of the movie than I did out of the book. Out of the book, it was, they were her parents. And the movie was kind of like, they were really nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That looked out versus parenting. Very different. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But no, so when I saw the movie, when I was reading the book, I really didn't have a vision of what anyone would kind of like look like. So for me, all the characters fit.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any, I guess, adverse reaction to anybody's acting. I think they pretty much did a good job to me.
Yeah. I think they did a good job too. Now, I don't know about the Southern accent. Sometimes they were
horrible.
But the man that played the attorney, let me tell you,
he's been in a lot of movies. Like A Time to Kill vibe.
Yeah.
What he was giving me.
Exactly.
I was like over here getting all like worked up. Like
he just
did like final closing at the beach. I was like, oh, he's a good
I felt
actor.
So good about him. I'm with you. I love his speech. Did you guys think when you were reading the book, I'm going back to the book, did you think that it was going to be Chase's fiance that killed him? Like, that's where my mind was. I had no idea.
When I was reading the book, I thought it was going to be the store owner. Like, I thought he figured it out because, remember, she came all beat up and everything. He knew what was going on with her without her really having to tell him. He already knew anyway. And I thought he snuck in and killed him.
Because remember when they were fighting on the dock,
He took the hat.
He took the hat, like went like this, brushed it off, and then gave it to Kaya. So, or not to Kaya, to Tate. But I was thinking that was him also,
as I didn't read anything about it. So I did. They had me so far gone. I was like, yeah, I should get back off it. I thought it was him all the way up into the closing speech, because at the closing speech, he made so much of a point to say, how did she get back and do it? And I'm like, oh, she didn't have enough time. And I was like, she did.
I had no idea it was going to be her. I was so blown away on that book because I just knew it was Chase's fiance because she found out that he was still messing with the Marsh Girl. So she killed him and took that necklace because she was tired of seeing it around his neck. Like that was I ended the story.
I was between him, and I actually thought it might have been Tate in the beginning because you know, he was gone, he came back, you know, all of that. I said, oh, and then he hated him. He thought he was such a bad guy. I thought maybe he did it, especially when it was like she told him what happened. I said, oh, wait a minute. But then I kept thinking to myself, nah, he got too much going on for him. He didn't do it. But that black man knows what it is.
Okay, so I thought it was like jumping myself. And when I was watching the movie, I was conspiracy theorying at that moment. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking that, you know, at the end, when they grow older and they go to Duncan's funeral,
uh-huh,
and Mabel hugs her and says, he loved you.
Yeah.
As in like he took your secret down to the grave.
I thought so too.
I think that he gave her the bus schedule and worked it all out. That way she could come back in town and kill him and get back
the co-conspirator.
Yeah. Oh, so that was what I was thinking, that like he and she hugged him and was like, he really loved you. It was like he took that to his grave.
Could be, because when you think about it, that's what I kept saying. Number one, well, that's why I thought it was him, because of the bus schedule. I was thinking he probably timed it so it would seem as if she didn't get it. But when you think about it again, she never got around. She never went anywhere. How did she? Somebody had to tell her what to do, how to do it. In the movie, it was very short. Like, let me just see this. But if you think logically about it, she really didn't do much. Like, I mean, a bus is not that difficult, but it is a little bit if it's the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but she was determined, and she was very smart. Like,
really smart and strategic.
Yeah.
But opening it, the way they did that scene at the end, with Tate, I thought it was so touching. It felt so good.
Was when she passed away?
When he found the shell in the book in the back of the book. Yeah. I was just like, oh.
And his face was like, it was time. Like, he was like, okay, let me just let this go into the marsh and be where it is.
Yeah, right. Put it back. This woman, like her upbringing, the part that warned me so much is all of her struggles. And she was like the best author ever. And of those books and her art drawing.
So much.
And she made so much money. And I loved it. I love this story.
I did too, but I was upset that there was no kids.
She couldn't have any. Even? Mm-mm. Remember she said it would never, it didn't happen for them, even though they tried.
Oh. Yeah, but I just couldn't figure out why.
But the brother had some that she had.
Yeah.
But,
That's the only upsetting thing to me, because I was like, oh, that would have been so cute, but...
Well, it passed down from one, the publishing, like, she had book after book after book.
But, in that land.
Yeah, 350 acres?
Right. That land.
Insane.
See, originally when I first started reading the book, I just assumed that Chase was coming to get with her to, you know, somehow get her laying out from under her. That's what I was thinking.
I was thinking that
in the beginning, and then I'm like, nah.
Yeah, but she got honorary degrees and doctorates, and it was just an amazing story. So, and I actually thought it was a great edit.
Delia? I don't know. I have four letters in my name and two repeat themselves. I'm terrible with names. Sorry. Delia.
Yeah.
That's true.
Huh?
Four letters and then two repeat themselves.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
I just figured it out.
It's Delia.
Okay.
Not Raya. It's Raya.
All right. So I think I don't have any complaints about the cast.
No.
I don't have any complaints about the cast.
But you don't like the
actors. No, the actors were bad.
Well, yeah. I think that like they needed the accents to be a little bit different. And I say a little bit different as in like the classism that we were talking about in the beginning. Like if you were supposed to be all hoity-toity, like then yeah, I get having a Southern drawl, but like talking a little bit like without the accent. But then the people that were supposed to be more Southern and lower class having a more distinct accent. So I feel like they missed it on that mark.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, we're back. Just one thing I wanted to say real quick, because I was writing all these things down, because I think I had called you and I was like, some of the sayings they said in here, you running like a coon in a tree, and I bet your engine's head. I was just like, okay, y'all real hard. And I forgot what the other one was. You can't run away from every whipstick. I said, what? Don't run away from a whipstick? And this was not old.
I bet you an engine's head.
Yeah. I bet you an engine's head. We can't do 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 do. I was just like,
now that's some crazy mess.
Well, it was written now, but it was supposed to be based in the 60s.
I know.
In Southern.
Yeah.
North Carolina.
I was just like,
no cover.
Ooh, I'm glad those are gone. But anyway.
Right. Thanks for sharing this.
Sorry, full glass for me.
Full glass on the adaptation.
Yeah, I full glass.
Full glass.
Mine was a full glass, but I did give it a full glass.
Okay. Looks like I'm getting a full bottle.
All right, this one on.
So go check out this book. If you don't, even if you don't get a chance to see the movie, it is a great story, and I think anybody that reads is going to enjoy it. But I'd love to hear everybody's opinion on the adaptation. Mm-hmm. So check it out and let us know what you think.
Follow us on rewatchwine.com, all the social medias, all of them.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.